Okay. So, I've been asked to talk about dark matter plus X. This is a very broad topic because as far as we know, dark matter could basically be anything. There's, you know, some restrictions about how it couples to us from various experiments, but there are a wide range of possibilities for what it could be. And X could also be anything. So really, this is, you know, it's such a broad topic that there are many, many different signatures to look for. I'm just gonna touch on a few points of what are experiments currently looking for and the challenges associated with that, as well as some ideas for how we could get better sensitivity to dark matter physics. This is supposed to be fairly informal slash interactive, so if you like ideas, don't like ideas, have your own ideas, feel free to call out, and we can also have time to talk about it later and in the dark matter session. Okay. So, just a quick reminder, the problem with dark matter at colliders is that it's dark, and so we don't actually see it. So we can only see it if it recoils off of something else and infer that it's there from missing momentum. And so this is the dark matter, and this is the X. Often these standard model particles that recoil against the dark matter come from ISR, from the initial state radiation. And so this gives you somewhat model-independent search, that it doesn't really matter what dark matter is, because we know what the initial state quark and gluon couplings are to other fields, okay? So this could be a whole bunch of things. It could be a jet, photon, lepton, Z Higgs, Z prime, bottom, top, and so on. And these generally fall under the classification of mono X signatures. And there are searches for many of these final states, where basically you look for a single object or, say, TT bar pair or BB bar pair in association with missing momentum. I'm gonna focus mostly on the mono jet, just because if we are relying on ISR and QCD has the largest ISR rate, then we get a larger signal rate. With mono jet, of course, we also have a larger background rate. So this is a plot from the most recent CMS 13TeV mono jet analysis, where we have the missing ET here, and here's the spectrum, okay? And so we see that it's dominated by the Z to neutrinos background, okay, which is not surprising, because if I just replace the dark matter with neutrinos, then it looks exactly the same. But there are other subdominant backgrounds that are not that subdominant. For instance, W to L nu, where the lepton is missed, TT bar, Di boson, et cetera, et cetera. Multi-jet backgrounds at low missing momentum. And it's a little bit hard to see here, but there are a few different signals that are plotted here. So for instance, this black dashed line that you can follow here is what happens if you have a Higgs that decays invisibly. Okay, so the typical mass scale there is on the order of 100 GeV. The blue and the green dashed line.
That's an on-shell Higgs?
It's an on-shell Higgs, yeah. So this is just, yeah, you're producing gluon fusion, and then you have a mono jet.
But not off-shell, on-shell.
I think it's just on-shell, yeah. The blue and the green are if you have vector axial mediators where the mass is 1.5 TeV. So this is going into the sort of EFT-type limit, where the new physics particles are much heavier. And what you'll see is that the overall rate is maybe lower, but the spectrum is peaked to, or extends to much higher net, okay? It's higher than the Higgs, basically above a few 500 or 600 GeV, okay? This is just from the fact that the characteristic momentum scale for things that are recoiling off of heavy objects is gonna be larger than off of lower mass objects. So if you're trying to tell apart, you know, the challenge is we want to see either this blue curve or this black dashed curve as a deviation on top of this one. For the blue one, maybe it's a little bit more believable that it's easy to do, because you look for some, say, featureless distribution, and then maybe it extends, you know, there's an excess at higher net. But if we're looking at, say, Higgs, the shape is almost the same as the Z to T bar. And so it becomes quite challenging to disentangle these things. So if we look at what the actual results of the search look like, I just put one of the tables. This is from the CMS Run 1 data set, because they have more data, and so it's the most constraining. And here's the background.
You're pointing out, I think accurately, that it's harder to see the signal if the shapes are different, but that obviously doesn't mean it's impossible, right?
Of course. Yeah. No. So this is more to set up the challenge associated with it. Yeah, but anyway, so this is the state of affairs, okay, at least in CMS. And so we can look at the background predictions. So for instance, you know, we see a lot of events. Basically, if we integrate from here up, we see a lot of events, and we have to, you know, if we want to see a deviation, we want to really predict the background very well. And we see here that the uncertainty in the background is fairly large. Okay, it's about 5%, 4 to 5% in this bin. And that's much larger than you'd expect from statistics. So this is telling us that there are systematic uncertainties on the background estimate, which are driving the size of the limit. So if we can get better estimates on the background, then we can put better constraints on what the new physics is that we can see, okay? Because we can look for more minor deviations in shape, or we can look for some excess in normalization, and so on. Okay? Atlas, they have a smaller systematic in run one, but it's the same kind of qualitative barrier that you're running into. Okay? And one of the major sources of the systematic uncertainty comes from how do we actually estimate what this background is? So one of the ways, perhaps the leading way right now, is that we say, okay, well, if I have a Z plus jet where the Z goes to neutrinos, there are similar topologies where I just replace the Z or some of the final states with something else. So for instance, instead of Z to mu bar, I have Z to mu plus mu minus. Okay, I can also replace the Z with a W, which goes to a lepton of missing energy, or I can replace the Z with a gamma. And so I can I expect my signal to predominantly be in this topology, and so I can measure these different control regions and try and use some ratio of the control region to the signal region from Monte Carlo or from some theory prediction in order to estimate the background. Okay. So this is probably the easiest one because it's exactly the same particle, it's the same initial states, and so on. The problem is that the leptonic branching fraction of Z is much smaller than the invisible one, and so you're always going to be limited by the number of events that we have there. Okay. By contrast, we have, for instance, about twice as many gamma plus jet as we do Z and mu bar plus jet. So there are a lot of statistics here, but now you have some complication because a gamma is not exactly a Z. It couples differently to the different states, so maybe there are some uncertainties from PDFs that are folded in, maybe the angular distributions are slightly changed, maybe there are other properties that are different. Okay? And so what we really need to do if we want to use these different control regions is get a very, very good handle on what this ratio is in theory so that we can then normalize the signal region correctly and get the systematic uncertainty down. And so this is fortuitous because we happen to have this precision frontier workshop running at the same time, and this is a kind of question that can be addressed there, and apparently there was a discussion about this last week as well. But really what we want to know is how low can we go on the uncertainty on this measurement? There was some discussion in the dark matter group, which we're hoping to have a joint meeting with the precision frontier people who work on these kinds of signatures, but in addition to just getting better handle on this ratio, maybe there are other ways as precision theory calculations get better. Maybe we can do more theory-driven background estimates, or are there other interesting ideas for new control regions that can be used that have sort of different kinds of systematics that can be used to cross-check and maybe improve the estimate? And really, all of this boils down to, for now, okay, it's preventing us from maybe setting a slightly stronger limit, but the real fun comes if we actually see an excess. So if we see an excess on something and it just looks like a little increase in normalization or some little deviation from the prediction, we want to make sure that we can convince ourselves we actually discovered dark matter and not just keep ruling it out. This is really going to be one of the main limiting factors for these searches going forward because, of course, if we can't improve the systematics, then going to much higher luminosity doesn't really buy us a whole lot.
Yeah. Can you say a little bit on sort of the state of the art? You mentioned theory-driven backgrounds or theory-driven background estimates. What's the latest on, say, Z plus jets in terms of what can be calculated?
So I'm not really an expert on this. I think that for Z plus jet, they might have NNLO. Do they have NNLO?
There's
NNLO.
Yeah. In the search, what's the selection? Is it exclusive one jet or is it inclusive one
jet? It's generally somewhat inclusive, so it depends on the search. So for instance, in run two, they now allow up to, or at least, I can't remember if it was CMS or Atlas, but they allow up to 4 jets. But there's usually some requirement that on both the PT of the leading jet and the MET, so that you're preferentially selecting a topology that has one very hard jet, and then you allow some other jets. Some of the searches put a cut on the PT of the leading jet over the MET. Some of the earlier analyses do veto There's one analysis that like, I think, 30 or 40 inverse picobarns that only allowed one jet, but most of the run-one analysis allowed two jets.
Because the Monte Carlo people are much more comfortable than NNLO people with inclusive.
Yes, of course.
Exclusive.
Of course. Of course. So the concern there is if we have more jets than maybe TT bars, so it's becoming more of an issue. But yeah, it would be a good question to see what are ways of selecting monojet type topologies that don't introduce these big logs and things that you get from jet vetoes.
Maybe this is a question for the experimentalists, but aside from doing the best job that you can on the theory side, what would happen if an excess was seen out in the tail and it just couldn't be made to go away? What would you do?
It's a good question, and I don't think you would wait around for the theory.
That's exactly why I'm asking.
So you would have to look at other analyses to see what is it. This, remember this before this was the workhorse of the dark matter program. This was the workhorse of the extra dimensions program. And before that, it was the workhorse of the Suzy program. So it's clearly can be any of those things. All you could do, so the first thing you would do is you would watch it and see if it grows like a signal as opposed to a graph. You don't need anybody's help to do that.
But systematic.
But if it's doing that, and your question is if it's convinced us that it's a real thing, but we have no idea what it is, then I think you would have to look at other channels to try to see whether it looks more like Suzy or more dimensions or dark matter. And the dark matter would be one of the harder things, I think, to convince yourself that you're seeing.
So, I think this is one of the scariest places to see an actual signal, right?
Yeah.
If nothing else ever shows up.
But yeah, go ahead.
It's happened a lot of times that we've seen something that we couldn't explain. Most of you have never heard of most of them because we've never left the collaboration. And so we have some experience doing this. And as Fish says, you look in other places, but also you look at the event displays. Is there something you missed? You go through a long list of brainstorming about possible systematic screw-ups that you might have made, trigger things you forgot to account for, zillion cross-checks you make, right?
But I think you have something that has all the problems.
And it just won't go away. Yeah. Nothing looks weird.
And the other comment I wanted to make is that related to that is one of the issues here is not just having a good enough theory calculation for the Z to nu plus jets, but understanding the shape of the missing energy tail, right, in simulation. One of the motivations for doing this background estimate from the photon plus jet is that we want to use the missing energy distribution we see in data, because we don't always trust our missing energy simulation itself. Now, another idea here is to try to use, instead of using the photon channel to extrapolate the missing energy bin by bin, but to use the photon channel as a place to improve your missing energy modeling, sort of at a deeper level, convince yourself you understand it so that you could then use a pure simulation strategy where you're not limited by the statistics of the photon sample to generate a background estimate. And that would be interesting. It would improve the status of the experiment overall because you'd have a better handle on missing energy. And it would give you different theoretical problems with your background estimate, which might or might not help.
So let's start back at that view for a second.
Is the best handle you have is the photon plus MET, and then using the Monte Carlo ratio of photon to Z to get out of the tail?
That's the largest sample in data of a similar MET distribution.
But you would look at photon plus MET, but at photon plus jet.
Well, that's what I didn't say that.
Okay.
Can you show can I see the CMS plot again?
I mean, don't you have to worry about the modeling of missing lepton and W plus L nu?
Yeah.
At the same level. Which is, again, not a theory issue.
So there was a discussion last week about this kind of thing from the precision people. What's the conclusion to that? Is it under control, the difference between, say, photon plus jet and Z plus jet and so forth? Where does that stand? Would you really have...
So we had a discussion based on the SUSY analysis. They use the same method. For SUSY, it's more difficult because we are interested in
smaller amounts of that.
No.
The jet
binning. So we're interested in what happens with three jets, five jets, seven jets, nine jets.
Yeah.
And the calculations are only inclusive to one or two jets.
I
and there are some the next leading order effects, also the electroweak next leading order effect, change the ratio of W and Z with 15-20% in the tails.
Yeah, so what about this context? Though, I mean,
well, that's why they have the best calculations. They claim it's 15-20% in the tail.
That's the answer I was wondering about. In the inclusive sense, 15%.
But in the tail on the ratio.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, but so, I mean, you can overcompute.
I mean, that's a shift,
that
right?
That may make it murky for a little bit. Should 15% is not going to prevent you from finding a signal
if it's that small.
Well, no, that's with the two inverse trumpet parts. We're going to have 3,000.
No, but
it's invisible, for example.
Look, you have no signal there. You already probably put a coupling that is pretty large in there, because there's an arbitrary coupling in there. Right?
3,000 inverse femtobars, it's going to be totally systematic.
Actually, where does the question
so important, right?
Where does the 15 or 20% actually come from? Because since we have next to leading order, the healing order actually should be lower than that.
So 15
correct. Yeah. So now they're using the full electric corrections as a systematic, on that, you have a...
So 15 or 20%, I should say, was the change in the ratio once you put the electroweak correction, excellent order corrections.
Oh, okay.
And what is the source of that? Where are these electric corrections important?
It's more in the tail.
It's electrically Sudakov, I think, that's the
problem. This 15% is just an overall rate, or does it affect the shape?
It's in the shape.
It's really the shape.
In the shape, and it gets larger at a large proximity.
That's more difficult.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Matt, you have a question or a comment?
Okay, I mean, I guess, obviously the electroweak corrections is, first of all, I'm not enough of an expert on that to really understand what we control between now and the time where this becomes relevant. I mean, this is not the kind of measurement which leads to a discovery very rapidly. So in some sense, it's plenty of time. But assuming the electroweak corrections are something that can be brought under control on that time scale, there is another handle, and I wonder if it was discussed in the precision part of the workshop about using the distribution of the first and the second jet, which has some particular characteristic for Z plus jets that involves the fact that it's not entirely initial state radiation in the sense that the Z can be radiated off of the jets themselves. Whereas here, presumably, the pattern is different. So with sufficient statistics for different models, you'll get different distributions, and they won't match Z plus jets. So I wonder how much investigation has there been into that? How much data do you need to be able to even start to do that kind of thing? Do we have enough control now that we're at NNLO at the first and second jet, that kind of thing?
We should also mention that the Block 2 discussion starting at 11 is going to be focused on this topic. And we'll have some of the precision to
But you sort of changed your question, right? Because you asked what happens if renewals, and all this discussion is still on whether we could tell if it's
no, I'm sort of answering Scott's question, which is if there's enough data and enough power in looking at the jet distribution, this is a way of distinguishing, is this just a mismodeling of QCD in the amplitude of the QCD effects with the electric corrections properly included, or is it actually coming from something whose source is different because it's giving us distributions which really don't look like it might not be possible even with 3,000 or so parameters to do that, but we should know how much we need.
Yeah. I'm still saying that once we answer that correctly, how do we know what kind of signal it is?
The distribution, I'll tell you.
Also, if you see it in jet and photon or not, if you see it in jets but not in photons, or photons but not jets, it helps. Those are clues.
So what is the signal differential diagnosis you can make to prove that it's dark matter?
You can't prove it's dark
matter. Well, how can you prove it's non-stable?
So
I prove
it's not.
Let's assume we can prove it's not stable.
Okay.
There's a lot of things to discuss.
That was really my question.
That was your question, right? Yes.
How do you prove it's not stable? Okay.
Oh, your question was how do you prove it's not stable?
Yeah. Okay. But I think with the standard model, the electroweak corrections up at the TEV are pretty large, okay? But the 20% effects or so are all pseudo-Poff logarithms, and they are reasonably well understood. So I don't think that the uncertainty from electroweak up there is anywhere close to 20%. Okay? And certainly the QCD calculations, okay, I mean, I haven't done those calculations myself. I've heard some of the talk last week, but I would also guess that out there we are more talking about 5 to 10% at most. So, I mean, they were worrying about 5% deviations from QCD in the lower BT range. So I think the theory uncertainties are probably less than 10%.
Yeah. Okay. So, can you clarify one thing? So we're talking about 10-15%. This is in the absolute prediction of this spectrum for this particular process, but does it relate to the transfer factor from the control region to the signal region?
The one I was talking about, so let me make specific. If you look at this ratio of Z to photon, there is the next leaning order correction give up inclusively about a 20% effect in the tail. So what is that uncertainty, that 20%? It's less than 20%, obviously, but if you want to be...
But is the uncertainty in the ratio really smaller than for the direct calculation of Z plus jets? Or Z plus one jet, inclusive?
We would probably never only use the direct calculation, because there are other uncertainties just...
I mean, you can cross-check it against the photon, but I think you might actually get additional systematics from the extrapolation from Zs to photons, because photons have fragmentation issues and so on.
So then you have W and Z comparison, which
gives you a different comparison.
W as debug, I thought that count.
But you could encode some kind of V tagging.
Well, I think that's what they do.
So maybe we should, keep discussing, because there'll be time to discuss in the dark matter session. And also, the non-monojet part of the talk will be, looking at other signals that you can have from dark matter that hopefully you produce a cross-check, a signal, a monojet, or disentangle it.
I just have one last question.
Yeah.
I'm sure I know the answer, but I'll ask anyway. You can also do monophoton plus MET, and I assume that's not nearly as sensitive as the monojet.
Generally not, because the signal in the background is sort of comparable for monojet and monophoton, but the rate is smaller. So, I mean, it's an...
Assuming a QQ-Kai-Kai interaction.
Assuming a QQ-Kai-Kai interaction. Of course, one of the advantages of doing a monophoton and mono-Z and mono, et cetera, is that different signals can, if you have a Higgs, then you get lots of VBF and associated vector boson production. And so maybe that rate is higher than it would be if you just had ISR, for instance. So,
but for QQ bar initiated, it's still the jet's still.
It's not about the QQ bar initiation, it's about the interaction. If you have a gamma gamma chi chi effective vertex, then the photons.
Yeah.
In other
words, if dark matter couples to photons, then.
If the dark matter coupled only to photons, is that
what you're saying? Or predominantly.
Okay. Or if it has any coupling to photons, it can help. So there'll be some examples in here. So if we leave aside the issues of background estimates and just look at the results, there are nice results that come out of the monojet searches. So for instance, these are from the same CMS analysis. And the results are now presented in various simplified models, as well as effective field theories. In terms of the mass of the mediator that communicates between the dark matter and us, and the dark matter mass. Okay, and this is the 8 TeV constraint, and this is the 13 TeV constraint for some choice of coupling. Right? Anytime you project onto some theory space, there's going to be some assumptions about the underlying theory. So, and then this is a comparison.
By the way, on this one, is there some kind of agreement now as to what reasonable couplings to assume, or are we supposed
I don't really
to
want to get
all possible couplings?
I don't really want to get it. I mean, at the end of the day, if we see a signal, then it'll be interesting, but if we don't see a signal, then, even these plots have a lot of caveats. So, for instance, here you say, wow, the LHC is doing really well at low mass, which it is, but here the couplings are fixed, and therefore, the cross-section But if I say I want a 10 to the minus 40 centimeter squared cross-section, that's fixing the mass of the mediator. So this is implicitly typically mediators that are in the TEV range. If the mediator is much lighter, then this bound goes away. So these plots have to be taken with a grain of salt. They're useful for some base level comparison, but at the end of the day, there's no real way of totally comparing these experiments that are probing very different.
Well, I have a question for the experts, because I never understood that. I'm on CMS, but I never understood what these guys are doing. So why is it a 2D plot? I'm assuming that all of the sensitivity comes when you make the mediator on shell. Mm-hmm. And so once you make the mediator on shell, whether 1,000 TeV mediator decays to 2 dark matter particles, 0 GeV or 100 GeV, cannot make any difference.
So the reason is that if the partonic center of mass energy is of order TeV to create the mediator, then if you think of it in terms of the parton evolution, you're evolving over a much larger range of energy scales, and you typically get harder radiation.
No, I understand. But once I make 1 TeV, if I have 1 TeV mediator, why does the limit depend on is different whether the dark matter is 0 GeV or 100 GeV?
Yes. I think part of it is that there's some assumption about the relative widths in terms of decays and TeV bars.
That's still very small.
Yeah, sorry.
There's no difference.
And so why are we doing this plot?
If you look at the plot, they do, look at mediator 400, they do have some sensitivity to the mediator being off-shell, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's some sensitivity for off-shell mediator.
The only dependence that you're seeing here in the vertical direction is just the branching, the partial width of the dark matter.
But how do you, the partial width into dark matter, you get it from a Lagrangian that is missing all sorts of pieces.
Right. So that's why the colors don't change a whole lot in the y direction until you get near this point where it's going off shell.
It's a simplified model where you're assuming when you make this plot that you capture it.
That's taking a simplified model to an extreme where you have this new particle, this mediator, and you say that it only couples, say, the QQ bar and dark matter. But that doesn't make any sense.
Nobody believes the simplified model.
So actually, this is the next.
No, not really.
It gets worse, though, Claudia.
I know it does. So that's why I'm.
Anyway, I think that this is not the most important thing. The most important thing is whether we see an excess or not to make sure that we're.
Well, it does have the implications when you start comparing it to these other experiments.
Exactly. That's why I wanted to point out the implicit assumptions that come in.
So I'm going to ask a leading question about the coupling system.
Okay.
For the theorists, how many people write viable dark matter models that you have with those coupled? Order one couplings.
No, there are viable models that have order one couplings, but of course they're not our favorite ones.
You have to point out the caveats there. This is a rather cherry picked. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Simple way to express the
yes,
models,
yes.
And it may not be extremely fair to the direct experiments.
There's nothing wrong with the propaganda as long as you remember that's what it is.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think
that's
these are propaganda plots.
Just look at those plots and decide what they're going to spend their money on, and that's where it matters.
I think
there's no excess. It's all just propaganda.
Yes.
It's all just communicating among ourselves, Atlas versus CMS, whatever. Because there's no excess, what do you really learn from all of these plots?
And particularly comparing them with other experiments where the assumptions and the issues are different. You really just can't compare them.
But that's important. If you see something,
has the comparison.
If you see something, that comparison is very important because the different experiments have different assumptions, which is really valuable, right? Like why do you see it here and not there, etc. That's very valuable if you've seen something.
I mean, I think the point is that they're at least explicit now about what assumptions they are making. Yeah, and so it is possible to correctly compare them. Whether that is a reasonable model point is up for debate.
And by the way, the LHC is now more explicit about what it's assuming than Lux and Super CDMS are when they put their
for their astrophysical
plot. There are assumptions there too.
This is far from a perfect comparison, and there are many, many caveats that. But it's better than what was done in the past, and this will continue to evolve. So this is kind of a first step that has been developed in this sort of discussion between the experiments and theorists over the past year. So how to set up this stuff up.
Do you have anybody from the direct detection community?
We're trying. It's a more diverse community with lots of personalities, and
we don't have personalities.
It's harder to build consensus across many, many groups with that sort of culture.
So, I think one thing that we want to keep in mind in all of this is that we don't want experimentalists to spend all of their time running a million simplified models and generating plots. What we want are experimentalists doing interesting analyses. And so, you know, really, we don't want to get too much into a discussion of, you know, this model or that model.
Is there an agreement between the collaborations on the model?
There was a...
So maybe you should explain for people that don't know about the dark matter forum.
Right. So there was a in 2015, Alice and Sam set up a dark matter forum to kind of come up with simplified models to use. And there's a 150 page white paper on this that kind of compiles a lot of work that was done already. That's still not nearly a comprehensive set, even of like the most easily motivated models. But nevertheless, it's sort of a starting point. And so there's an agreement that the experiments are going to use those models, at least initially in Run 2. And there's also agreements on the couplings, for example, including us. So there actually is an agreement to use common couplings. This set of couplings is not that agreement. So the agreement is that the core coupling is smaller in the final model, so it's about 1/4, which just reduces the Gadget constraints. We'll get to that in a second. But so there's agreement on the couplings, there's an agreement and a description of all of the issues that we've just been discussing on how to do this comparison and why you should take this with all of these grains of salt. You can read about this on the LHC Dark Matter Working Group page as well as the SARSAC groups.
So these simplified models are mostly just the S channel and go through scalar, vector, axial vector, just like this.
So there's a set of generic S channel models, which are just vector and axial vector for fermionic dark matter. There's T channel models as well with similar you can have a colored mediator in there. And then there are also models that are more targeted at other non monojet fines, like middle monohates, which is extra simplified models that say would fit in two and double models.
I think one of the main benefits of the simplified model framework is that it points out that, you know, even in the EFT formulas, if we have some blob that's coupling quarks, the dark matter, say, that same blob, if we cut it in half and reverse it, also gives a coupling between quarks, for instance. And so this gives us sort of dark matter signatures without dark matter final states. There have begun to be plots that are in the context of a very particular simplified model, again, choice of couplings, choice of masses. The plots of, say, monojet and monophoton reach against the dijet constraint. So here is the region that's excluded from dijets at 8 TeV. Here's the region that's excluded from dijets at 13 TeV. And all of this is just to point out that in the context of a particular model where you have some visible particles you can actually tag, and in particular if you have a resonance where you can do a normal kind of sideband analysis and look for a bump, it's much easier to see something than nothing. And so the monojet searches are very, you know, model independent. We kind of hide all of the physics that's going on here. But they are maybe not necessarily the strongest. And so here, the monojet constraints sort of win in this corner here, again, for this particular simplified model. Whereas in this simplified model, where there are actual resonances in QQ bar final states or in leptons, it's even stronger constraint, you can have very powerful constraints from those searches as well. So
what are these curves? The monojet is shown only where it wins, or where it excludes?
So the monojet is excluding down below this line. And then the dijet is excluded, I believe, in this sort of semi-shaded region here.
So I don't understand why at 1 TeV mediator mass, a lot of jet can't exclude a 400 GeV dark matter mass, but it can't exclude a 200 GeV.
This is essentially the same plot as here.
It's on shell still, isn't it? Because it starts to go off shell.
You start to have phase-based oppression. Couplings are a bit different here. This is G equals 1 for both of them, and this is G equals 0.25. But the shape is the same. It's this kind of wedge here. And, of course, in a simplified model, you can also start putting things like target parameter space for where you actually expect the dark matter to sit, if it has its relative abundance of these interactions, and so on. So they're useful for getting kind of a sense of the bigger picture, but all of these lines are then very much restricted to this very particular axial vector mediator with this particular coupling.
Why are the Dirichlet limits dependent on the dark matter metals?
Again, it changes the branching fraction, because the coupling into dark matter is larger than the coupling to quarks. Yeah, so it has a rather large effect at the turn on.
Okay. Most alarming thing about this plot is at 1.6 keV from the mediator.
Yeah, there's a new wedge region here.
There's just a very slight excess in the 13 keV analysis. It actually also excludes, that same analysis excludes sort of below 1.4, down to about 1.1.
Okay, so that actually would be nice to see at the plot.
Well, I think more importantly is, presumably as we update this with more data, that we go away, sure.
This is another part of the data which isn't shown on this plot, which is the angular analysis, which is
that's probably up here.
Higher masses, yeah.
So anyway, the lesson of this is just that the dark matter, at least the monojet or mono X searches, may not be the most constraining in a particular model. And so in the event that we either see a signal and we want to cross-check it or have improved sensitivity, in a given model, we can exploit new signals from that model to try and look for it. But the price that we pay is that the results are more model dependent. Now, in this case, for the DiJet, we were already doing DiJet resonance searches, or not we, but the experimentalists were doing DiJet resonance searches, but maybe there are some signatures that are not currently being covered, and that will be a few of the things that we look at now. Okay. So as a simple example that's going to be kind of motivating a range of signatures, we can consider sort of, in some case, the simplest dark matter scenario, which is just a new electroweak multiplet. Okay. And this is so simple, it's often called a minimal dark matter. This is expected in general theories beyond the standard model. For instance, in supersymmetry, we can have a new doublet from Higgs-Enos, and there are also triplets, etc. I'm going to focus on the doublet case. And a doublet just has a new charged particle and a new neutral particle, and they're conjugates. So there's a chi plus, a chi minus, a chi zero, and a chi zero bar. And it was pointed out by Scott and others that because of electroweak symmetry, these particles are degenerate in the limit the electroweak symmetry is preserved, and then their masses are split by the effects of electroweak symmetry breaking, okay, either by coupling between the Higgs and some other states, or loops of gauge bosons. You know, now in the broken phase, the W, Z, and gamma have different masses, and so they induce different mass splitting. So what you end up with is a charged particle that's very slightly heavier than the neutral one by a few hundred MeV. So you might think this is easy to see because we have a charged particle, and that gives a very striking signature. But the decay of the charged particle, because the mass splitting is so small, is typically to a pion plus a neutral particle. And because the splitting is so small, the pion is very soft. It has a momentum of order 50 MeV or 100 MeV. And good luck finding a 50 or 100 MeV pion in the LHC. So generally, what you have is, even though it's a charged particle, it's actually invisible from the perspective of the detector. It contributes to missing energy.
How long does the chi plus minus live?
Yeah. So that's a model-dependent question. So in the Wino case, it lives sort of order 6 or 7 centimeters. And I will talk about the disappearing track signatures. In the case of the doublet, it's shorter. It's around a centimeter or less. And so you basically don't see it.
What does it depend on in the model?
Oh, it depends on the mass splitting. And because the triplet has no hypercharge, it couples less to the gauge bosons. And so the splitting is smaller, so it has a longer lifetime.
So the mixing, the coupling to the Higgs could generate a big splitting for the.
It could, yeah. So I'm talking in the case where it's just radiative. The doublet has a larger splitting. But yes, you can also have tree level splittings. But
meaning if it's ion mass, then it's like if you're using that as a rough ball.
Yeah, so for the Higgs-Zeno, I think the mass splitting is like 350 MeV. So it's a bit bigger, but it's not that much bigger. And the point is that the mass the lifetime goes like the mass splitting cubes at low energies, and so you know you have an e to the minus something that goes like mass splitting cubes. So it doesn't take a very large increase in mass splitting to just totally kill off your any signal associated with the displacement. Well, if it's decaying to exclusive pions, then it goes like f pi squared delta m cubed. But yes, at higher. So we can say, okay, well, this is covered by our monojet searches, so what's the sensitivity? And there have been various studies of this, and so on the x-axis we have the signal significance. This range is for 1 to 2% systematic.
Why do you say it's covered by the monojet searches?
Pardon me?
Why do you say it's covered?
Oh, just that I have some new invisible particle, and so I can produce that.
Are you talking about pair-production of this particle?
Correct. Yeah, so I'll produce, say, chi plus, chi zero, or chi plus, chi minus. They just decay to invisible stuff. I don't see it. So if I have a hard ISR jet, then it's the same story as for anything else. Okay. And so what we see is that 14 TeV, this is with 3,000 inverse femtobarns, depending on the systematic uncertainty, we might not actually be able to improve over the current bound, which is about 100 GeV. And this plot is really just an illustration of the fact that WIMPs are really hard to see, right? Because you have a very small production cross-section. You're competing against electroweak backgrounds that are very significant. And if the mass scale is relatively low, you don't get any dramatic features in the MET spectrum. And so you're really just looking for some very, very small excess. And we might not, at the LHC, even be able to improve over LEP, depending on what the systematic uncertainty is that's ultimately achievable. And I should point out that for a Higgs-Zeno of this mass, the cross-section is actually bigger than you need for a WIMP. So this is even easier to look for in some sense than a WIMP, and it's still very, very difficult. And so WIMPs are hard to look for in monojet searches.
So again, photon radiation doesn't help you, I presume?
So this is going to be the... So in monophoton, the answer is not really. So some folks have done this study. But I'm going to show some recent results that Etter...
I was referring to this.
Yes. So what we can do is use the fact that the invisible particles are actually charged. Right? And so even though they register as missing energy in the detector, there's some chance of photon final state radiation off of the charged particles. Right? And this is very different from the neutrinos, which are uncharged and give off no photon final state radiation.
But not much.
Not much. So the rate is small. It's about two orders of magnitude below the total rate.
And you have an estimate of what happens for Ws where you miss the lepton?
That's right. Yeah, we do include that. Yeah. So the point is that when the boost is relatively large, there's a collinear enhancement of radiation by these charged particles. And so you end up with photons that are somewhat aligned with the direction of the missing energy, whereas in the case of a jet where it radiates a photon, it's typically going to be more pointing in this direction, up to, of course, W backgrounds. So the point is that we can improve the signal-to-background rate at the expense of taking a hit in the signal rate. So depending on what the size of the systematic uncertainty is that's ultimately achievable, this can be very beneficial or can at least be a useful other channel that you can look in for these kinds of signatures. So the difficulty here is that you have a subdominant W background in the main analysis, okay? But now the lepton can radiate a photon, and you actually have some particle that, if you miss this lepton, this photon is kind of pointing in the direction of the missing energy. So what one handle on this is that the most of the photon radiation comes off of the decay products of the W, and so the transverse mass of the photon and the missing energy is below the W mass. So just like you can do in other ways of suppressing W background.
How many photons are you considering?
We're considering like 15 or 20 GeV and up. So of course you can put the cuts harder, but then your rate will go down. Okay. So there's a question of how soft you can make it, but these show you some benchmarks of what can be achievable.
And the penalty you're paying is about a factor of 100.
In rate, yeah. And the increase in signal to background is sort of order 5 to 10 that you get. So this transverse mass cut kills the case where the photon is exactly aligned with the missing energy, but there's still sort of a peak that's seen before the effect of the cut, whereas the background peaks at pointing towards the direction of the jet, essentially.
Sorry, purple is the signal?
Purple is the signal, yeah, I should have put that.
Why is
purple?
But shouldn't the signal also be collinear with the missing energy?
Correct, but because we had to apply this transverse mass cut, in the limit where these things are exactly cos delta phi is zero, then this is zero, and it's below the W mass.
You wouldn't get a photon both. Why would it have to be? Why would it be aligned with the MET?
Because everything is going in the same direction.
You got pair production.
but it's recoiling off of a hard jet. So you have the missing energy is pointing in one direction. One of them emits a photon.
So to trigger, you had to have a recoil.
The trigger.
Everything
yeah.
is going in the same direction.
Because of the trigger.
Opposite the jet, right? Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. In the W as well as in the signal.
The W is much more boosted.
Yeah, so the W, you have to apply this selection because the W would give you a photon pointing in the direction of the missing energy as well. So in both of these cases, you, in the signal and the W, you get kind of a dipolar pattern because you can have photon emission off of the jet and you can have photon emission off of the dark matter. Okay. Whereas the transverse mass of the W contribution is peaked below the W mass, whereas the signal extends to very high transverse mass.
If you actually look at the distribution of the photon relative to the Mech direction, I would have thought that that in those there might not be nearly enough data for the question when I ask, but I would think the distributions are quite different, not only because of MT, but also the angles. And it, in fact, you'd want to use the low MT region as a constraint to establish what the background from this particular source is. How do you measure the background here? Because clearly you can't calculate this at the level you need.
Right. So you'd use similar control regions to what are currently being done. So for instance, you have photon plus jet, where you have an additional soft photon in the event. Okay. For the W.
Radiation off the jet.
Pardon me.
Which tells you about radiation off the
That's
jet.
Correct. Yeah. And then you can do, you could use the low MT region as a control region for the W backgrounds, or you could invert the lepton selection, which is currently done as well.
These plots you make, you require the lepton to be lost, right?
Correct.
Yeah,
so you're in a part of the phase space where the photon basically is recoiling against the neutrino.
So just in connection to that question, can you elaborate on what exactly the failure mode of the lepton detection is? Is it mistimed jet? Is it completely?
So taus are a major contribution. It could just be that it is too high in rapidity. It could be that it's not isolated for whatever reason, because basically they veto isolated tracks, and so you could just end up with some deposition of energy.
So there's a geometric loss, and it pretends to be a jet, basically. There's
reconstruction inefficiencies as well.
Right, but in that case, it becomes a jet, sort of.
If it's a muon, no.
So the Atlas search used tracks. So it vetoed reconstructed leptons, at least the HGV one, and also if you just had an isolated track. So that would get, for instance, single track tau decay. Okay. But it's not going to be perfect. I mean, as we saw, the W to lepton is sort of a third of it.
I mean, the question is that matters because the way that net ends up, if my 40 GeV electron is isolated and looks like a 40 GeV jet, then I'm going to call it a jet and my net changes. So the exact nature of the failure mode detecting the lepton matters for how you define your MET.
I mean, it's not going to affect the MET reconstruction so much. Sure. I mean, it's not like it's vanishing from your detector. I mean, they have...
Well, no, that's my question, right? That's my question. So if it is undetected and leaves, versus it is mislabeled, that will change how the MET is defined.
Right, and the other worry is that it's correlated with what the photon is doing, making it hard to measure the background. Case when the lepton is present. I love this type of idea, but it seems like there's some real challenges to figure out.
Sure, yeah. And I mean, as always, when you add in an additional requirement, then there are additional challenges that have to be faced.
What's the transverse mass cut you apply here?
80 GeV.
80. There's also the possibility that the lepton starts showering early and then looks like a photon.
Yes, so that will also largely be cut out by the transverse mass cut.
Well, what is the mass hypothesis for the dark matter here?
This one is for 150 GeV Higgs xeno, but it's not super sensitive. No. In part because the sensitivity of 14 GeV LHC is not very good to Higgs xenos, right? I mean, as it is, you can't really get above 100 GeV. So
weird. So maybe we should skip to the punchline. I still don't believe this is going to be good enough anyway, even if you could handle the background. So can you show me that?
So here are plots. So the solid is for 5% systematic and dotted for 2%. Okay. So solid is just the monojet plus missing energy. Blue is the monojet plus missing energy plus a photon. And we also showed just if you do a naive combination, because the kinematic regions of phase space tend to be different. The reason is that you already lose a lot of the signal by requiring a photon, and so the met cut is relatively lax. It's sort of order a few hundred, you know, 300 to 500 GeV. Whereas for the monojet, you gain by trying to push out onto the tails.
Sorry, what was the difference between dotted and solid?
Solid is 5% systematic, and the dotted is a 2% systematic.
So in other words, one of the post-gamma wins by a lot.
Yeah, I mean, of course, there are all of these factors that need to be taken into account. But the point is that particularly when you're, you know, you have a ton of data, and then it becomes this question of how well can you estimate the backgrounds. If you're having some independent information.
Yeah, this is 3 inverse out.
This is high luminosity LHC.
You can do it off-limit.
And then we looked at 100 GeV as well. Actually, it does, relatively speaking, better for other, so you could also use this for model discrimination. So for instance, if you have a larger multiplet, right, for instance, like a quintuplet where you have doubly charged states, the radiation naively goes like the square of the charge. So instead of paying a two-order of magnitude penalty, you pay something that's more like a factor of 20 penalty in the rate.
Did you look at it? So this is all predicated on the fact that these tribunals decaying really promptly, but that's a distribution. So the tail where you might have a track. Did you look at whether you win by asking for a photon or
at 14 TeV you don't. At high luminosity you can, okay, because they're more boosted. The comment that I would make about that is that the disappearing track signature is powerful, but it is model dependent. So for instance, if I mix in a little bit of a WeNo with the doublet, then the mass splitting goes up to, say, 500 MeV, and you're done. So this is really, you're winning in some range where the lifetime is too short to actually pick up the disappearing track. Generally, if you can see it as a disappearing track, that's going to be...
Yeah, but for any lifetime, there's a chance that you'll get a long...
Correct, but it's like I said, it goes like the cube or the fifth power of the mass splitting, and so very quickly, you know, there is an intermediate mass range where you can't reconstruct this log decay product.
Sorry, can you go back to the 100 TV? So just to, let's see, so...
Because they're much more boosted, right? And so they radiate more.
Amazed that even just monojet is so shit, right? Like, it's 200 GeV. Damn, that is tough bricks.
It's very hard.
Monojet plus gamma will go up to 300. And then, I see, so really, is it all the systematics? So if you want to have sort of the slightest chance of scratching the TeV scale, you need to get your systematics down to 1-2%, you know, really excellent.
Lower than that.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm looking at the combination, and it doesn't seem, you know, if I want exclusion at sort of closest to TeV, okay, so...
I mean, I would take combination with a grain of salt. I mean, the point of combination is to show that there's some, you know, complementary information.
But just qualitatively.
Qualitatively, like this, yeah, it's very...
It's
very hard to look for. So this is why it's kind of a nightmare scenario.
Where do you get the idea where 2%, 5% come from?
Is this harder than it
seems? I mean, so that was based on some estimates that we saw either in existing analyses and ranges that people have considered for these analyses for comparison. I mean, we can rerun this with any value if you're interested in seeing for that.
That supposed to seem like very low total systematics on an analysis of this kind.
So I mean, these are kind of in the range that are claimed by current analyses, but you know.
It's basically the bound between Atlas and some system.
Yeah.
So in your study, you made some cuts and you counted how many events you had left. Do you remember what the number was for 100, say, for the 14 TeV 3 inverse out of Barnes 100?
For the signal for the optimal, so we scanned over MET cuts and, you know, to optimize. I think there were order 100 events for signal, and signal to background is order sort of 15%.
And signal to background, sorry.
10%, 10 to 12, yeah, that ballpark. So it's hard.
So I think it's really useful, just because 100 TVs. So separate from the particulars of the LHC analysis, I mean, this is really cool. I think that, so it is fun and useful and worthwhile to think about the implications of this for 100 TeV, because this is an area where all the cloud searches are terrible in the sense that you get like 100 GeV, 150 GeV, right? Like those aren't the kind of mass reaches that we're used to, yeah? So this is the hardest case, like you say, the nightmare scenario. And 100 TeV, even, you know, you win on rate and et cetera, okay, so you get 300 or something. Now, the question is, seeing as 100 TVs at this point, sort of, you know, if it's happening, it's far enough away that, well, it's far enough away, which is bad because it's far away, but it's good because you can look at these kinds of nightmare scenarios that you have a real hard time with the OSC, and you can think, what are the possible ways that I could point the texture design to cover these things? So my question is, for Android TV, if I wanted to design it with, you know, what are the current blind spots at the OSC, things like certain display searches, things like certain monojet or, you know, gamma searches, is there anything that could happen on the detector level to make this easier?
I mean, obviously the lower you can go, the better, but I mean, that's very challenging on 100 TV. I mean, one option which Andy Haas talks about is, you know, if you do have want to reconstruct these disappearing tracks, if you have some segment of your detector that's very well instrumented in the tracker, then, you know, that can get down to millimeter, you know, centimeter length track, then that, you know, you're gaining exponentially here, whereas elsewhere you're gaining, you know, kind of logarithmically-ish. So
that's
of course, this should inform things, but
costs going up.
Yes, exactly. So since we're basically out of time, and I don't really have time to talk about the many other things, I just want to put to kind of the recap of what are things that you can look for.
Okay, so 10 minutes, right?
Should we do it all?
Or we can roll this into the next plenary slide, or later in the week, if people want to come back to it.
I am open to suggestions.
How much, it looks like you have a skip.
I'd like five or seven, yeah, slides. Yeah.
The first three slides took 30 minutes.
Yeah exactly. So.
And then let's postpone it, and we can come back to it
okay.
Later. The discussion was good, so
okay.
Let's not rush it.
Okay. Later. Sounds good. Well, thank you for the discussion.
You may just do the monitor part, and then we'll come back and do the others. All right, thanks.